back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Yes, morena, Lara.
Morena.
I'm so excited to chat politics with you. I am every week. I feel like there's always, you know, it's always things that need to be unpacked.
Yes, it's definitely heating up and getting to the sort of drama-filled point of the election year, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, and still a long way to go, though. Got to remember it's still, like, more than 5 months.
Marathon, not a sprint.
5 months, yeah, no, it's still, it's like, it's not even, it's like, it was 6 months at the start of this month. No, it's still like, yeah, it's still 5.5 months away, 5 and a bit months. It's like, come on.
Come on.
Ages.
Yeah.
So much could happen still, though, right? So much could happen.
A lot is happening. First of all, I think we should cover off this environmental kind of lobbying situation with big businesses and secret meetings, like, what is going on?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting one, and it's got some really interesting kind of discussion points around the Constitution and the sort of separation of powers and, like, how do you challenge unjust laws and so on and so forth. So Mike Smith, who's a Māori leader, climate advocate, he's taken Fonterra and Z Energy to court, basically over this idea that they're, like, negligence or, like, nuisance in some way through, like, tort law. I don't understand law, but, you know, it's something around the idea that companies polluting should be responsible for that pollution.
Mm-hmm.
So he's taken them to court, and it's, the case has been progressing through. And what's then happened is Fonterra and Z have provided some documents through their government relations, i.e. lobbying side, to National, to the Prime Minister, to the Prime Minister's office. And then what has happened is National, as part of this government, have then changed the law so that under the Climate Change Act, they can't, which hadn't been updated in a while, that particular provision or whatever it was, that you then can't challenge in the courts polluters, basically. So companies, you would no longer be able to charge them under that kind of part of the law that Mike Smith had been using.
Mm.
So they're closing that gap. And Lux's argument is, and he kind of argued, he discussed it with John Campbell on RNZ yesterday and kind of told John Campbell to be careful with his line of questioning, which was a bit worrying. Man. It was a bit anti-democracy. Oh, it was a bit of an awkward moment. But basically, Luxon's argument is that himself and the cabinet, they would all just think that that was how they'd changed the law anyway. So they're trying to say, no, we weren't actually influenced by lobbying. But opponents, including Mike Smith, say, well, the wording was in the documents provided.
Mm.
Some people managed to get them for, I think it was like the OIA or Discovery or something along those lines. But then also there was this other kind of side issue where the Prime Minister was like, I've never seen these documents, we don't think these documents exist, but they had already been given and Mike Smith had them. So there was this other kind of like, well, issue there around transparency and not really knowing what was going on in your office and all those sorts of bits as well.
Yeah.
But I think overall it kind of shows that, look, we know this already though, right? Lobbying and to some extent maybe political donations, which are in the press again today, they influence politicians. For the political right, sometimes that lobbying and those donations influence politicians to do stuff they were going to do anyway. And this, but that's just kind of the nature, I think, of right-wing parties, and it shows that it's a bit of a problem, though, that we probably should level the playing field, so to speak, across donations and lobbying to make sure that, you know, right-wing parties aren't getting advantaged by the fact that they have a set of values the current economic system rewards through big business.
Mm.
It also looks at, you know, like right now, if a law is unjust, where do you challenge that law? Like, how do you challenge that? Like, and we've seen Māori do this a lot, right? So if you think that there's something that's violating your rights, there's like some avenues for a declaration of inconsistency with the Bill of Rights Act. But then the government can also ignore that. But at least that's kind of a, hey, this is inconsistent and needs fixing. At least that's flagged by the courts. And the Waitangi Tribunal can, of course, recommend that something needs to change because it's inconsistent with the Treaty of Waitangi. But there's not really much else to challenge. So, those are the kind of two big issues as highlights. Yeah, the secrecy, the transparency stuff, and the fact that, hey, like, the government can just, like, override or the law, even when maybe there's a good point there.
Yeah, because I've seen Luxon be questioned on this yesterday, and, you know, it looks like they've touched an exposed nerve, you know. I've never heard someone say, no, but so many times in a row.
It's pretty crazy, though, because it seems as though this would be something that's quite damning, but like you say, it's by no means all that new, this issue of lobbying within right-wing parties, so sort of like, if it isn't the first time and it seems to be able to keep happening, why is it not as damning as it sort of seems like it should be on paper?
Yeah, look, I totally agree with this. And like, if I was going to start a new side project, it would be something along the lines of like, what leads countries to change lobbying laws or their donations laws? Because we looked at it in the Independent Electoral Law Review, the donations, the political donations, and, you know, recommended a cap at the end of the day. And I really do like the idea of a cap of something like tied to the median wage, so no one can donate more than the median wage to a political party. I do like something like that, or a referendum or something, you know, go have a popular slip it. But I think something needs to change there.
Yeah.
Our lobbying laws repeatedly have been raised as a real issue, because you can't, for example, in other countries, be justice minister on a Friday and a lobbyist on the Monday. You know, like, that's how that works. So our lobbying laws are super loose. And some other nation laws. So what leads us to change, though, is the real question, because people go looking, oh, politicians be politicianing, that's just what they're all like. And then they kind of don't think, okay, actually, hey, I'm a voter, we can change this. People don't then make that connection. So it's kind of tricky, because then it's just like usually reinforcing. People see the corruption and the, you know, like, oh, okay, cool, that's happening there. Oh, yeah, that's what they're like. Okay, ignore. And then they do it again, and it just kind of, people just, the trust erodes over time because of it.
100%.
And so it's just this big kind of deadlocked problem where it's like quite hard to challenge it. I mean, what we could expect maybe if the government changes is then Labour and the Greens get in and they change some of the laws. But what we've then seen is that they're National Enact and the New Zealand First will get in and then change them back.
Yeah, reverse it.
So,
yeah.
Like, oh, okay, what of it? So that's probably where it is. It's a little bit like thinking about how we would end up with some kind of constitution with like codified like supreme rights that we have to make sure that all the laws abide by. I mean, I don't even know how you would start that in New Zealand. I mean,
it goes pretty deep. Mai,
you know, there's some wānanga from Matiki Mai, like what was it, 10 years ago, something like that. But
yeah,
these citizens' assemblies might be the way, but it's just, yeah, even that's going to be a really hard process. So I don't know, this is just the situation and we're deadlocked. And yeah, I mean, surely as the public, can we like run out and get like a couple hundred thousand people together and like try and, I don't know, do a petition, but see, then Parliament decides.
Yeah,
and
those are the very people that are, you know,
benefiting from it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't see how it ends. Unless, okay. I don't know, like maybe if there was some kind of mega scandal, like one that actually did take down the Prime Minister. Like if you remember back to sort of 2014, that whole moment of truth with Kim.com and Julian Assange, like one that actually really took down the Prime Minister, could be the impetus for some change, like a Royal Commission or something. Royal commissions are harder to ignore, but they still ignore them, though.
You sound like you're sort of talking revolution a little bit here, like.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty administrative. They'd be like a retired judge.
Yeah.
It's not revolution, it's a retired judge.
Petitions or mega scandal.
I mean, mega scandal.
Speaking of mega scandal, I mean, it's not too scandalous, but let's move on to what a crazy couple of weeks Mikey Sherman has had. You know, obviously had a bit of a blip in the career path and then turned around and won a journalism award.
Yeah, this one, it's like sometimes you like look at the treatment of two individuals, and you go, okay, so that individual, what is different between these two individuals? Okay, one of these individuals is the Wahine Māori. I wonder if that's got something to do with it. So basically, yeah, there's, I mean, people probably would have heard the sort of blog post about Mikey Sherman saying a really like a homophobic slur against another journalist, Lloyd Burr, and then that coming up on a blog post after various journalists had investigated it, and they'd backed down a little bit because TVNZ was like, hey, we're going to threaten legal action. So Newstalk ZB had a go at reporting it, and that they kind of backed away. Also, there's a bit of discussion as to when something actually reaches the public interest sort of threshold for these sorts of things, because journalists are not elected officials. And then it does also sound like, so there's no excuse for using a homophobic slur, but it does sound like that there was some quite personal, gross things said about Mikey by Lloyd before that, but he hasn't responded. He's just gone quiet, which is really interesting. So there's like the details of the drama, and you know, this being going on a right-wing political commentator's blog as being the main mechanism for launching this, so looking quite political, especially as Mikey Sherman had been kind of censured by the Speaker's office for, I think, trying to chase down Stuart Smith and some other little things there. So it just turned into a big mess, really, and then Mikey Sherman ultimately stepped away, and then, you know, probably about a week later, we see her win Best Political Journalist. So I think it's been kind of a hard week, I think, for a lot of people in the media, and a hard week or two for Wahine Māori, who were like, oh, wow, look, we had the first Wahine Māori political editor, and then now this is how she's treated in the public, the same way that, you know, like, Tori Whānau, like, Kitty Allen, all of them have been treated in the media. Mm. Well, it's, again, not that Wahine Māori don't do bad things and need to be kind of like, have faced consequences for them, but it's the disproportionality of the consequences compared to things that other people have done who are not Wahine Māori, who are not women of colour. That's the issue. And so we'll see what happens next for Mikey Sherman. I mean, she's actually a pretty amazing person. I was reading like a piece on Women's Day about her. She's got like 6 kids and was doing a bachelor's degree on the side of being political editor. I don't know. Like, how do you pack that into a day? So I'm sure that she'll find... She's still relatively young as well. I think she's in her 40s. She'll find something else to do, I'm sure, and have people, you know, value her and all that sort of thing. But I imagine she probably just wanted to be political editor and get on with her job. And this was kind of, pretty cancel culture-y.
I also think in the grand scheme of things, like, you know, of course there's no defending using a homophobic slur, but the fact that this has become quite a convenient thing for a lot of, like, quite far-right people to attack her over, and then a lot of those people will be, you know, right now we've got the definitions of woman and man bill that's coming up, and people will be sort of, it's like, you can't really pick and choose when you're an ally to the queer community just for when it suits you, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And some of the stuff, I've got a PhD student, Alex Kerr, shout out to Alex, who's doing a PhD around like the sort of general hate environment and online environment and the effects that that has on transgender people's mental health and well-being. And it's like, we know from the evidence, like, let's just put away the whole idea of actually listening to transgender people for a moment, which is what we should do. But if we look at just the sort of academic scientific evidence, we know that if you're creating a kind of, you're using people's personal individual human rights as a political football and creating these environments where, you know, like one of his participants talks about laugh reacts on Facebook posts, and that's been in the literature as well, you know, like all of that sort of thing of like people's comments on Facebook posts and things like that nature, and people's like mums talking about how they're going to vote for New Zealand First because of this bill, all of those sort of things, like we know those got negative impacts. And so it is, it's like, really, you're going to do that, and then, on the one hand, and then on the other hand, you're not backing Wahine Māori in the situation where it's like, she's apologised. I think Lloyd Burr's been like, I don't know, again, we don't know what his side is and how he's felt about it, but from a year ago as well, that's what you're going to choose. And again, these people talk a lot about cancel culture and fear about being cancelled for their opinion. And then they cancel someone.
When it's convenient.
Very strange. It's like, can we not be a little bit democratic and equal in some way? And like, you know, like totally, you know, when you see, for example, like all of that stuff around, especially the Māori with an act, and hey, like, look, we don't want to attack their Māori identity. We want to try and be equal with that, you know, that sort of thing. And it's like here we've got another situation where it's like it's not any kind of anything approximating equality here. So,
Just quickly, you know, on this sort of whole thing of the nastiness that seems to be going around with people's words, there's been a pretty yuck comment from Barbara Edmonds about Nicola Willis that's come to the surface as well. So it's, you know, both sides are a bit guilty of this at the moment.
Yeah, this is a very strange news story. I just, like, had to look at it multiple times. It came up with stuff the other day of, like, you know, that silly thing where it's like, would you fight the one horse-sized duck, or the 100 duck-sized horses, and they were saying there was, like, someone had done, like, a recording of an internal Labour Party sort of media event, and, you know, like, I don't think they had any real realistic expectation they were being recorded and it would be leaked to a journalist. But, yeah, Barbara Edmonds made some kind of joke along the lines of that she goes up against a, was it a horse-faced
a duck-faced
duck,
horse.
Instead of a horse-sized. She said faced. And she's like, I go up against the finance minister who's like a horse-faced duck. She's kind of like insulting her appearance a bit, but then she also in the quote, because we don't get the recording, in the quote we go, is that right? Is that how you say it? But we don't know if she's making a joke about her appearance. It's kind of hard to tell. Mm. But she's apologised. And then Nicola Willis actually did come back with this, like, it's a bit, like, and it was quite a good bird. It was like, look at Labour worrying about lying to the media and, like, worrying about how their politicians were viewed in an internal training session rather than doing policy. And
well, this,
like,
is what I was just thinking, yeah. The fact that the meeting's like, would you rather fight 100 duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck? It's like, how about we talk about some policy in our meetings?
How about we get it together, guys?
Why don't we think about, let's just develop that. What was that policy that they're not giving us the details until after the election? Why don't we just fill that out a bit in this half hour,
I feel like what I've really garnered from this is a lot of these politicians and politics adjacent people might need a poster of that kind of like think
before you speak.
And it's like, is it thoughtful? Is it helpful?
We've got one
is
of those in the office.
Is it nice? Is it kind? You know, like, we just need to have a little think about, I guess, how we're treating others in respect to how we want to be treated.
I've got a slightly different take on this. I'd say that, like, people do need to be able... I don't think you should make mean jokes about people's appearance, but, like, especially in a professional environment. But I also think there's some privacy issues here and, like, going to a journalist. I think that's also a bit of an issue because it's like, who is recording this weird Labour Party session and then who is leaking it to staff? Do you know, like, that's some kind of violation there as well? You know, like, definitely don't make jokes like that and appearance jokes and that sort of thing. But then it's like, and then don't leak it to staff. And then why is staff reporting on this weird training session? You know, like, staff kind of got pulled up the other week for someone talking to Orini Kaipara's staff rather than her saying that she's thinking of leaving Te Pāti Māori. So it's just a little bit around journalism. But, I mean, also, journalists have got so little funds and are operating on, like, 20% of what they used to. So it's kind of, that's also a hard thing. So I think there's a few things going on here, but, like, it was almost like a self-injury with Labour.
Mm.
Like, it was almost like self-sabotage in a way where it's like, you know, we've got the budget this week, and then meanwhile, you guys are sitting around doing this, like, weird old meme thing.
Yeah.
But for what it's worth, don't fight the duck. Just go for the horses. I've got a duck that's a normal-sized duck. You don't want to fight that.
Yeah, no, that would be vicious.
Well, I'm glad we've come to that consensus.
Thank you so much, Lara, for your chat today. And we're looking forward to catching up next week.
Yeah. Kakita, I've got a bit of a cold this week, so I hope I'm out of the winter chills.
Yes, rest up. Get well.
Kakita.
Thank you, Lara.
Kakita.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.